Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is your host, Colin Cattell. Returning guest on the program with us today is Daniel Major. He is the CEO of Goviax Uranium. Daniel, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Colin. Always appreciate the time with you guys.
Well, you had some very interesting and important news out this morning. I'm going to get to that in a couple minutes. I want to start with talking about what's going on in the uranium market. Obviously, Cameco cut back on future production, and the spot price has been reacting. We have yet to see what's happening in the contract market or the long-term market. And most of the equities, not including Goviax, most of the equities aren't really moving yet. So what's going on in the overall market?
This is something you and I discussed when I was last on your radio show, which is, you know, we all appreciate the long-term fundamentals of, you know, nuclear demand growth, declining supply, and unless you have, because you have old mines, and you need a higher price for new projects to come on and gradually fill the gap. And that's the medium to long-term scenario. The problem that we discussed is the short-term problem, which is 75% of the industry is producing uranium at costs that are greater than the spot price, and if you include the capital numbers, than the term price. And so you have this scenario where you have an industry that cannot actually replace its resources going forward. And I think that's been highlighted completely by the way Cameco has said, there is no point us digging material out of the ground. It is actually cheaper to buy it. You know, therefore, we're closing down what most people would classify as one of the best uranium mines globally. So I think this is really is following through that whole discussion we had last time, Colin. And the other thing that was announced a couple of days ago as well was Honeywell announced an intention to close down on their UF6 production as well, or reduce their quantities of UF6. And again, that comes back to that conversation that we've had about enrichment as well, where, you know, the enrichment guys are benefiting from these high price contracts put in between 06 and 2011. Their spot price has collapsed in a hole and none of them can make any money on spot, but they're enjoying the pleasures of these long-term contracts, which are unwinding for them as well. And you're starting to see a lot more conversation in the last 2 or 3 months by the enrichers, by the fluorine guys, saying, hey, we've got to cut capacity here as well. And if that happens, then that will reduce more and more of the underfeeding. And that is that's a double whammy because it's the equivalent of a 6-point game coming through. So I think, you know, the Cameco announcement was a major event in our industry. And we really do wait to see whether it flows through into the long-term price.
Daniel, the equities across the board on uranium have reacted positively since Cameco. However, comparing them to how they moved with the same uranium spot price move of last year, they have not reacted much at all. And I think that that's because market participants, thinking back to last year, don't believe this move until the contract goes. Now, Govan Friedland, the chairman and founder, co-founder of the company, sent an email in small circles that I saw the other day with a chart showing that Goviax is one of the most, if not the most, reflexive uranium stock to upward price movement, and also seems to have the best downside protection. Is that something that you're seeing playing out right now?
Yeah, and it's something, you know, I've talked about a lot when I present the company, and we've always said if you look at Goviax relative to its peer group, we've been trading at a substantial discount to everything else around us. And, you know, despite the fact that we have this very large resource, despite the fact that we have fully permitted projects, and my argument has always been that when the market is in a, you know, a risky environment, when metal prices are low and everyone's taking the very conservative risk assessment, it's a bit like the dollar trade that, you know, everyone rushes and holds on the dollar when the market's a dreadful place. But as soon as the market starts to de-risk, people will start to gradually move across to the more value adding, more value accretive, but slightly riskier stocks. I'm not saying Govix is a risky stock, but you know, we are an African play. People view that as a riskier area. And I think that's what you're seeing, is that as this market unwinds and you get a better uranium price, people are realizing that, you know, why do I want to pay, you know, 50 to 100 times percent more for another stock when I can get a better quality stock in Govix that's undervalued at this time. And I was looking at the numbers today. We're trading at about 0.4 pounds in the ground EV. The sector average is about 1.5. And then obviously you have some of the much bigger stocks well over 3 times. So, you know, it's not rational that we continue to trade at this discount. And so I think that's what you're seeing there, Colin, is that as the quality returns to the market, the price moves, people start to realize that, you know, you've got to go to the leverage stocks, the ones that have got the real value to be had and can really leverage out of this market. You know, we're one of the few, as we say to people, who can take a project, it can take a development company and turn it to cash flow, which is really what we're in this business for.
Right. And so much of a stock is valued, Daniel, based on capability of management and their ability to finance and get things done, something Govix has demonstrated they're able to do. Today, you released a PEA on the Matanga project, which is in Zambia. It's the second PEA now, in addition, of course, to your PEA on the Maduela project. Can you talk to us about the significance of this PEA and how it ended up coming out?
Yeah, I'll just make a correction for you as well. Maduela is actually a PFS, and we've actually had 3 PFSs out on Maduela. So I think I got to put this in context as well, is that, you know, we've been one of the acquirers through this cycle as well, one of the few acquirers. And we've been very strategic about what we've acquired each time. So we acquired the Denison assets, and we're great having Denison as a shareholder of the company because we saw that potential in Africa. And then in the last couple of months, we've announced the acquisition for Africa Energy and Zambian projects, and we'll come back to that in a moment. But we also got our grant back for the license we needed in Niger, which is at Agaluk. Agaluk is directly next to the Maduela project. It's already covered by the environmental permit. But what is interesting about Agaluk is there's about 4 to 5 million pounds of the Miriam deposit is sitting there. And Miriam is the startup mine for the PFS. So obviously there's the economic potential of bringing that Miriam deposit back into the PFS as we move forward, as we've got that license. And there's 20 million pounds sitting there in the Agaluk license. This one is really interesting as well, because we did the AFR deal because we saw the synergies. Denison had acquired Mutanga. They got it mine permitted back in 2009. Since then, they added the Dibwe East deposit, which is well over 40 million pounds. But that was in an inferred category, and they didn't do the follow-up drilling to take it further, because of where the market was. What we saw as the potential was then acquiring Africa Energy's licenses, because they were either side. But most importantly, the main Africa Energy license was already permitted. So we now have 3 mine permitted permits adjacent to each other. We get the economies of scale, because as we bring those inferred resources in, which is why this is a PEA, not a PFS, we take the total resource up to about 60 million pounds that we can examine from a PEA point of view. Africa Energy had already got their mine permit, so they're taking it all the way through to a PFS standard as well. It was an internal PFS for the government. But what it meant for us is that we had 2 companies that have done a considerable amount of technical data. Denison spent over $50 million on this project. So all the process design has been done on both. What is great for us is that those 2 designs match. So we were able to consolidate all of that information and come up with a single mine plan that shows that, you, being very simplistic, going out open pit heap leach by working with satellite heaps with a centralized plant, a bit like Energy Fuels and the ISR guys do, you can come up with a very low capital project, a relatively low OPEX. What I've said before to people is, you know, grade is an issue when you look at mines, but be careful when you're looking at grade. the acid consumptions at Matanga are exceedingly low. I mean, they're generally well under 10 on the total resource. High recoveries, whereas we have much higher grades in Maduela, for example, but our acid consumption is higher, and acid is quite a big component of our cost. And in the case of Maduela, actually, we're now re-looking at how we can substantially reduce our acid consumption over what we've learned on this project as well. So what is key is we now have two projects, mine permitted. They both can produce potentially over 2.4 million pounds per annum, and they both have an all-in cost at under $38 a pound, including all life of mine capital. They both have break-even cutoffs in the mid to low 40s and very strong IRRs. I mean, we did this PEA at $58 a pound. It's a 25% IRR at that number.
Thanks for the correction regarding the PFS there, Daniel, on Maduela. As you know, I do these interviews on the fly without notes, so those mistakes do occur.
You're not the only person that forgets that. Don't worry.
Well, looking at these projects together, and you kind of just hit on this, so it'll be a little repetitive, but what does this mean overall for GoviX as a company compared to peers? Because obviously we have separate projects with separate timelines, but combined is key to consider for an investor.
Yeah, I mean, most companies that you're going to look at are generally one-trick ponies. They have got one project. Some of them are good, some of them are bad, but they've only had one. What we're able to present to an investor here is, and that's why we did the original deal, is we have three projects now. We have the advanced project in Maduela ready to go, working on the financing, working on optimizing it. Very close up behind it, we've shown that we've got a very simple project in Matanga, and then we have Falea behind that, which is needs more work, but there's also a lot of technical work done on it. The other thing it means is we can structure a company with the way we structure the debt. We may take a more conservative debt position at Maduela because it's going to be the first one off the rank, but that does mean that we've then got another project where we can be a lot more aggressive about getting that price leverage coming through. So it gives us that flexibility, whereas companies that have only got one project have a lot less flexibility in putting all of their eggs into one basket. We're not. For those people who want to look on the basis of a takeout, but I will say that three of the largest takeouts were in the last cycle were all in Africa. They were all cash takeouts as well. So, you know, Africa is a place that people do tend to hunt later in the cycle for the bigger projects because they can get them into production. We're presenting, you know, what a shareholder would want to see is a steady pipeline of good, solid projects that, you know, you're not investing just in one mine and that's it. What are they going to do next? We can already tell.
Excellent. Well, Daniel, two separate questions in conclusion posed as one here, both forward looking. One you won't be able to answer with too much certainty. The other one you can. First of all, are the same factors in place on supply and demand that were in place in 2000 that could drive a uranium bull of epic proportion? And the second one is, now that this PEA is out, what's next for GoviX in terms of news flow upcoming?
Yeah, I mean, on the first one, I think we're getting closer to that point. I think we don't have enough projects ready to go that if the gap opens up as we expect it to open up, it's going to be hard for projects to accelerate into it. So, you know, but we need to see those early tailwinds coming in, and we look with interest at the month end as well. For GoviX, it's going to be very much, and obviously this is all subject to what the uranium price does for us, it's going to be very much focused at Maduela still. We still have some optimization ideas of what we can improve, and we'll tell the market where we are on that. We'll continue to work on the debt. So that project will continue to move forward. And at Matanga, we're certainly going to sit down after this PEA and figure out what to do next. The next stage would be a drilling campaign. I think that, though, we would wait for a much higher price to kick in before we started really piling in, because I think we'd put most of our emphasis at Maduela.
Excellent. Daniel, thanks for taking some time out of the busy schedule following your release there to talk to our audience, and we'll get you back here in the month of December.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated. Take care.
think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on?